from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be
only. Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929 ESPN. I want to thank you all for listening. Of course, you can always listen anytime on your radio dial, 92.9 FM, ESPN, or 680 AM. You can keep up with all of the programming anytime, anywhere you are by downloading the Odyssey app. It's a free app. You can download, listen live, stream live. You can also even rewind. You missed a segment, you want to go back. You want to stay up to date on all of the great content here from 92.9 FM ESPN. Download the Odyssey app and stay up to date with that. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he, of course, is with us. My company this week is, of course, the director and head coach of Team Thad. You can always follow him on Twitter, on X, at Dream Big Herd. Follow him on Instagram. I am Coach Herd. Make sure you follow Team Thad Nation on all socials. Coach Norton Herd the Fourth. Good day.
Oh, for sure. Good day. Great day. Sports day.
All right, Herd. Here's what we're going to do. Let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. Eric Hastein's going to join us like he does each and every Thursday, 2:35. I want to discuss a couple of things with him. I want to discuss whether or not this is indeed the deepest Grizzlies roster. No one better to kind of have the historical context to discuss. I want to do that with Eric in about 30 minutes or so. We'll get into the list, go around the NFL news, which, Heard, I feel like the NFL news is as follows. Nickel corner tears ACL. That feels like it's non-contact injury. We don't have a lot, but it feels like we're getting like the guys that, unfortunately, like their season ends before they've even like really put on the pads. So we'll get into more of the NFL news then. Jason Smith will join us like he does each and every Thursday. Talk some Tigers and more with him. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But here's what I want to start with, Norton. I'm going to read to you the headlines over at ESPN.com, and you tell me when you finally hear a headline that even remotely piques your interest. You ready?
Ready.
Sources. Broncos sweeten top wide receiver Sutton's deal. He's already under contract, so essentially they just gave him a little money. Okay?
Yeah.
Sources. Rams Kendrick feared to have torn ACL, as I was saying. That's a nickel corner.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have remorse for him, but
right.
It's not.
But it's,
yeah,
right.
It's a human being.
The headline does tell you, it's like, okay, I'm good. Like, I know what happened there.
Yeah.
Okay? Lanning defends Oregon NIL program amid barbs.
Could you repeat that again?
Dan Lanning.
Mm-hmm.
Defends Oregon NIL program amid barbs, so like trading of like insults. He went on McAfee. Okay,
rough.
Okay, we're so far you and I, we're 3 for 3.
Yeah.
I have no idea if I'm pronouncing this right, but Flyers, I'm presuming Philadelphia, the NHL team. Konecny gets 8 years, $70 million extension. I've even started watching hockey much more. I don't know who this is, but I'm happy for him.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like,
right,
anytime guys get their money, like, I'm happy. This might be the closest I got to being at least remotely interested. Fields gets number one reps with Wilson Calf held out. So Justin Fields taking first team reps after Wilson is held out of practice. So breaking news, the backup quarterback took first team reps when the number one quarterback couldn't practice.
Yeah, he did what he was supposed to do.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. The bigger story is if Fields doesn't take QB1 reps.
Yes, that would be a headliner.
Correct.
There.
Moore says goal at Michigan is always to, quote, win it all. Breaking news. Football coach at Very Good Job says the expectations to win it all.
They okay? just won it last year.
Okay, I know this. I know I'm going to get you with this one. I bet you're a big F1 guy. McLaren's Norris regrets Piastri win controversy. Do you have any idea what those words mean? I bet 98% of our audience have no idea what that sentence even said.
Yeah, I don't. I don't understand. I understand a lot.
So you wouldn't click on that. Fish excited for, quote, true reboot with Washington. By the way, that would be the first head coach that is. You know what I'm super excited for? Walking into a roster with no talent.
Yeah,
that's what you know. You know what I've dreamed of is walking in. By the way, they doubled my salary and they doubled my assistant salary. That's why I'm the head coach at Washington. Like, let's get real. And then off-season grades for every NBA team. We'll discuss that a little bit later. But I think that would be the closest thing.
Yeah, I would kind of be interested in that. Like, I usually go through stuff like this.
Okay, so then I went over to CBS Sports. So, maybe, you know, if you ever want to be out there and say, like, okay, you know, sometimes ESPN doesn't really have their finger on the pulse. Like, a lot of times ESPN talks about what they want to talk about rather than what everyone else wants to talk about. So I went over to CBS. Most important men's hoops players in Olympics. Okay, well, that's like a get to know the Olympic roster. Biggest names to be traded will be, and that's a Major League Baseball trade deadline. Okay. We get the yearly column from usually someone that writes about the NBA that's way too online. It's now a perfect time to cut the season. Okay. I'm done reading the we can all agree that the league would be better if they had a shorter regular season schedule. It's but never happening.
NBA, right?
Correct.
Yeah, they make too much money for that.
Well, they're just the owners are never going to. If anything, they're going to add games. Like, let's be real. Like, that's the way this thing goes. Backfields passes first Steelers test with Wilson sidelined. MLB rumors: veteran lefty Hill eyes comeback, and I believe it's Rich Hill. Did not know he was still alive. Good for him. Report: Bengals bringing in UFL award winner for visit. Not signing, just meeting with someone from the UFL. Okay?
They do that?
I mean, I guess to bring him in, like, to discuss, like, maybe a, you know, a training camp tryout.
Tryout.
You know what I mean? Like, essentially. This is Major League Baseball. Report: union agrees to deal to subsidize lost TV revenue. Report: White Sox crochet might demand extension. Might. Okay. And this is actually what I do want to talk about. Ohio State players received, quote, about $20 million in NIL. And this is where I want to discuss with you, because you have levels of expertise, you have experience with it, and this is something that truly fascinates me. Because we oftentimes hear numbers thrown around. But I'm always, Jeff calls me cynical. I'm not cynical, I'm skeptical. There's, particularly when I know people want the information out there. Oftentimes I think the numbers that we hear for NIL are the numbers that agents or people that have a, people that want that number. It's like when an NFL contract gets announced, as we're talking about, it's the only major sport, or of the big three, baseball, basketball, football, not guaranteed money. Like, basically, I think the numbers, if you make about 70% of what the announced deal was, like, you did really well. So every time you hear a so-and-so signs for $160 million, my first question is always, how much is guaranteed, how many years, and when is it cuttable? So you hear these astronomical numbers thrown around with NIL, and let's stick with basketball rather than football, since you have way more experience in that universe. How real, like, when you hear so-and-so got $1 million, how many guys are really getting that? How real is that?
I mean, the best players are getting to that, but it's not a lot of people who's getting probably $1 million+. Because
to like, the best of your knowledge, roughly how many guys in the country do you think are getting that?
I say percentage wise, by themselves in college basketball, maybe 20-30%.
Okay, so that's higher than I thought. That are actually getting a mil?
If you go by what's being announced, there's a lot more.
Right.
Than that,
but that's what I'm saying. So I think that's my first question. When you hear so-and-so gets $1 million, how many of those guys do you think actually got $1 million?
Half.
Okay. So, and I actually think that's useful because that's always been my instinct. My instinct is if you hear so-and-so has a $5 million NIL budget, I always just cut it in half. Mm-hmm. Now, it's also important to note, $2.5 million when you got a maximum roster of, what, 13 scholarship guys? That's still a lot of money when you start cutting up the pie. But what I'm really curious about now is how much money do you think it takes to have what would be deemed to be like a tournament team type roster?
I would say $5 million. I mean, I think three with a lot of hustling to get you where you need to. But when you're talking about getting, like, the roster from, like, top transfers, top 25 to top 50 kids. And because I think even if you're not giving people $5 million, you're going to have to give probably 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys between $400,000 and $800,000, I believe. You know, that's the kind of, now that's the going rate right
there. Kind of like a power league starter.
Yeah. That's the going rate. So I would say 5 for sure, 3 with a lot of hustling. There's a couple schools I'm hearing that's over 5. But I would say $5 million, if you got the right coaches, the right support, $5 million will get you a kind of where you need to be.
Okay. So if we take that number, This is the other thing I've been wondering about. What do you think the number would have been pre-NIL to put together the big roster, like the under the table era, because that's what fascinates me. How much has it gone up since we've
under the table? You might have not need none but $1 million or less, because under the table, like giving guys. Hold on, first of all,
allegedly. So that's always our word. Allegedly.
So yeah,
it doesn't matter. Statute, they can't do anything.
Yeah. So this is what I think I have heard.
In fairness, Dan Lanning was on Pat McAfee today talking NIL. So.
Yeah, so I would say the reason I would say that is, guys, so you have to give $500,000 to $1 million now. When it wasn't illegal, you could get, like, $100,000 was a big deal.
Yeah.
From what you hear, because, you know, I guess you're not, allegedly, if you're doing it under the table, you can't pay taxes and all that
right.
money, right? So it kind of evened out. So you could give guys, I would allegedly think.
Cash is always more valuable than a direct deposit.
Yeah. So you can give guys, you know, 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, 200,000. So I would say less than $1 million. Now I think you need to have. And I want to also say this, Jeffrey. NIL deals, I would say 75% of them are a lot like NFL deals. This is why I'm going to say that. Because
you could make this, but that's not the guarantee.
Yeah, because I personally know guys that, you know, get them. A lot of guys out of my program, and I know other guys who didn't play for me, but I'm connected with parents of top players all over the country. You know, that first payment is good and everything like that, but a lot of people, and I know this is an issue that you're not even asking for, a lot of people are not getting that full amount. It's people complaining.
Jalen Rashada, who is at Georgia as a backup quarterback,
mm-hmm.
he's suing Florida because he claims that they didn't honor his NIL deal.
And it has been games, and I'm glad it didn't happen, where kids were about to, like, protest and stuff. And I'm talking about, you know, college basketball player before live ESPN game. So that's also another thing with it, too, because technically, Jeffrey, because NIL is not supposed to be set up that you pick the school.
Right.
It's supposed to be more set up. You already picked the school.
Right.
And so since it's not set up, technically, these deals outside the collection, another deal, all these deals, like let's say you say you're $1 million,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you can sign for it all. So technically, that's why it's even hard to sue on it. Like a school will tell you, we got you $1 million, right? Or we got you $500,000. I'm not sure they can write something in front of you saying Subway or this place is going to give you $1 million because technically you don't supposed to pick the school.
Right. even though I never visited and I've only Zoomed with them. Yes. Yes.
So that's where it get a little like discrepant too, because it's like at the end of the day, it got to be a trust issue between whoever's recruiting them, the kid, the university, everybody got to trust each other. But it's just like dealing with somebody who owe you money, Jeffrey. Like, people, payments be late.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you didn't have to sign none. Also, people have had to wait before they put their name in the portal because they're waiting for their last 20, 30, 40, 50,000, and they're scared. Like, if I put my name in the portal, am I going to get my – you know, so it's a lot to come with it.
And to your point, the way that most of these collectives work is I am pledged to donate, you know, whatever. Let's say I'm a $10,000, but I do it in monthly increments.
Yeah, for sure.
So – They may be waiting on the money to pay you. Like, so I can get where that gets complicated.
And I'm hearing some of the money now with the new stuff, they're trying to put some of the money past the date that you can enter the portal.
Right.
So
yeah, because they're connected to that. Yeah. Now, I've always said if I were my alma mater's Pepperdine, and we suck, but I've always said my plan is A, have my one X's and O coach, B, my fall guy, obviously, because I will be cheating my ass off. Let me just put it out there. Like, so I got to have someone that is my fall guy. Got to have him. Like, that was one of the most bizarre things ever to me. When we basically canceled Chris Carter for being at that NFL rookie symposium, and like one of his first pieces of advice was, it was like, buy one house, buy one car, get you a fall guy.
Yeah,
and I was sitting there going like, that's great stuff. And everyone's like, oh, how dare he? It's like, yeah, no, that was sage advice. Listen, is it morally like sound? I don't know. Don't care. I thought that was wise advice. Then I'm also getting my player getter. And then I'm coming up with academic curriculum that doesn't transfer anywhere. So that's the only that's the only enticement I have that can keep kids at school. You're welcome. Like, I can't stop you from transferring, but hey, man, those credits are only good here.
Yeah.
Only good at fabulous Malibu, California.
Yeah, that probably will be the most difficult of everything you said, because I'm sure some credits.
I know, that's the problem.
Transfer somewhere.
I'm not smart enough. Everyone else is doing the same thing, I'm sure.
I got to ask you off air, because it's very interesting. Mm-hmm. I never heard too many people pick Pepperdine. I actually been meaning to ask you that. At some point this week, but I haven't thought about it at the right time.
I can do it in one sentence, or one interrogative sentence. You ever been to Malibu, California?
I'm not sure, man. I've been to a lot of parts of California.
So it's outside of L.A. It sits on, like, the hillside.
Malibu,
over,
yeah.
Sits over, it's like where all the rich celebrities.
It's going
like,
towards, what's that other?
North. It's going towards, like, Santa Barbara.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, yeah. My 49ers,
so it overlooks the Pacific Ocean and whatnot, and it's like, yeah, I think I can do that.
So you went and visit there, and you just love the view.
Yeah, I was like, I think I can do this. Yeah.
Well, is it a good school? Because some people say it's a good school. What is your thoughts on the school, though?
Good school, not great school.
Yeah. Okay.
And definitely now not worth the money.
That's a very expensive
school. Yes, it's an extremely expensive. Like, it's one of those ones where I loved it, but if my daughter and I get to the point where she's like, I want to go to Pepperdine, we might have to have, like, a serious conversation. Oh, like, sweetie.
Yeah.
You see.
See, I remember them having some sneaky basketball teams some years here and there.
We were we kind of were Gonzaga before Gonzaga.
Yeah, I remember going to tournament a little bit, doing a little something.
Then when Gonzaga discovered, wait a minute, you can just buy like a couple of these guys and they're good and you can win. Yeah, we're going to keep doing that. And then when it started, like, that became an arms race, it's like, yeah, we wouldn't play the game, couldn't get guys in. Like, I remember one time we, like, actually got committed. There was these three guys out of San Diego that could all play. And, like, literally as soon as somebody cried wolf, our coach had a heart attack and had to retire for health reasons.
Whoa.
So as soon as, like, somebody was like, eh, I don't know if that's above. So we didn't have guys that could play the game. So, but back to, like, the actual things that I'm curious about. So when we talk about in the under-the-table era, $1 million gets you a good roster. That makes sense to me. Because from what I know, I covered college football recruiting way more extensively than I have college basketball recruiting. But I know, like, back in, let's say, like, 2014-15, so basically 10 years ago, somewhere between $3 and $5 million got you the number one signing class in football. And
under the table.
Under the table. Uh-huh. Under the table era. And so now if we find out, which Ohio State, if they don't have the best roster in college football, they have roughly the best roster. And so if $3 to $5 million was getting it in the under the table era, that makes sense that $20 million does, because to your point, if $1 million did it, all right, we'll add, multiply by five.
Yeah.
And there we are. So this is kind of what fascinates me. I think schools that used to be able to, in the under-the-table era, schools that were committed, it was a lot easier to do it. And now you're having to, essentially, in 10 years' time, and really, I bet it's honestly, I'd be curious to know this, when we first had NIL, like, actually come to the table, come above board, what do you think a good roster was?
The first year?
Yeah.
See, I think the first year was more like 1 to 3, 1 to 2. Yeah, it was
I feel like it's even doubled then.
Yeah.
It's even doubled in not even 5 years.
Yeah, in a couple, because this is the first year, I think last year and this year, people understand what's going on. In fact, the first year two, it was like how out of hand this could get, everybody learned. I think now, because the players, the parents, everybody, you know, more agents is involved now.
Repeat that, please.
Agents are involved now. Like, even on my level, people telling me, have you hollered at my manager agent? I'm like, what?
High school kids have agents.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I get it. Like, I mean, hey, you know, child stars have agents. Like, I understand it, but it's like, holy hell, we got here fast.
Extremely fast. I went from, because any parent that needed my support with an agent or something, just anything, college agent. One thing I never do is, like, if you ask me, hey, Herd, you know a good yard man, Clint.
Yeah.
I'm usually going to send you three numbers.
Yeah.
And go from there. But all three of these guys, I know they did good service with other people, did good service for me.
Right.
And this and that. So I usually, if a parent asks me, once I see them in college, they're on the mock draft.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like we got to start earlier.
Yeah.
You get what I mean? And I never want to start early. I wanted people to actually go to college and be having some good college stats, and it made sense. But now that they're involved and you got the collective and everybody understand which schools, which conference got that and how much piece of the pie that you can get from it, it's for real now. And now I think it's about I'm going to tell you this, in the next few years, I think it's about to blow up. But like anything else, I think it's going to then eventually come down and it's going to have like an ideal of what people market is.
So instinctively, I agree with you. I'm always a big believer. Eventually, the market corrects itself. Like it will always have periods where things went haywire, but eventually water finds its level. The one thing that always trips me up in this example, this is not a rational market. In the end, there are always going to be insane jock sniffers that want to win.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. It's like, because I keep thinking, well, the only way I think it actually calms down is if they do something that I just don't expect that they're going to do until they somehow get forced to do it. I don't even know how mechanically how it works. until they basically acknowledge this is a professional sports league. It needs to be collectively bargained. We have a CBA. If you break the rules, there are actually enforceable punishments and whatnot. Then I can see where it levels out. But I think it's so, I think we're so far from that that I don't even know if that ends up actually happening.
Yeah, because if people was cheating when you couldn't do nothing.
Right.
I'm still sure they could cheat now that you can actually do something. Well, if you came up with a...
It's like when they proposed with like the house settlement, like, oh, it's going to be like a 15 for college football. Mm-hmm. It'll be a $15 million budget. You don't think that maybe the teams that want to win are going to maybe, I don't know, sweeten the pot?
Yeah, for sure. Like,
Duh. Like, and by the way, you said nothing about having it enforced. Like, in the end, the reason why the NFL has a hard salary cap is when you break the rules, you get punished. There is a punishment. In college, it's like, what are you going to do? I mean, they tried to get Texas A&M with the collective. They tried to get, like, Miami. It's like, good luck. We're suing. And then the NCAA just backs down. So, like, that's the whole thing for me. It's like, I do want to believe if it's like a financial market that eventually it would level out. I just don't know if it ever does because it's just like the price for playing poker, and there's always going to be people that want to win.
Yeah. No. You hit on it with college football and college basketball. Because you know when you're NFL, you know you have people that invest in stock. You have people who buy these seats, quote unquote, you're supposed to own.
Yeah.
But I don't think people. I know people are passionate about their teams. But I think with college, no matter what you make the cap, it's going to always be this booster or somebody who, I don't know, maybe you know better. I feel like people are more passionate about their college or whatever like that for whatever reason, far as like if they went there or graduated. Because college is like, even though the NFL, NBA, like my whole family cheered for this team, it just feels a little deeper when your whole family went to a college and you're, you know, because you got generations of people who went to, especially in the SEC, that's what I'm more familiar with, the University of Memphis, where the whole family's win. I feel like it's always going to be somebody like, if let's say it's Ole Miss against Mississippi State. If they feel like they need to do some extra to get somebody over, yeah, this family is willing to, you get what I'm kind of saying?
Yeah. So what I would say is that is true right now. I definitely think that's true with the people that are boosters right now, largely funding it. This would be another reason I could believe that eventually it starts to get less insane and levels out. Our generation, college is still, to the generation above us, college is still a romantic thing. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times it was first person in the family going to college. And mm-hmm. that's always an emotional thing.
For sure.
Like, hey, like that's making it. Like, I think my dad's dad did correspondence maybe from Maryland through the GI Bill after the war, but like never like went to college. Mm-hmm. Like that wasn't a thought. Mm-hmm. So my dad's brother and sister and him, they're the first in the family to go to college and graduate. So it's true for those people. But now for our generation, college has become more transactional. It doesn't mean that, like I said, like I'm making the jokes about Pepperdine and being the coach, but it was just kind of a place I went to school. Like, I liked it. It was a good time, but it was also just kind of like something to do.
But would you say you're a little different? Because a lot of people that I know at the SEC schools or schools here in the South, their daddy, granddaddy, or mom, they some of their parents made it to college. And, you know, I didn't meet a lot of people like that, too, though, that I guess generations of family members who went there.
That is true. However, what is becoming...
That's changing, you're saying.
It's just like, it's just becoming more of, well, yeah, I just went to, it was what I was supposed to. I graduated high school. I was supposed to go to college next.
For sure.
That was the next step. So it just kind of becomes more of a transactional thing. The other thing is our generation is not making nearly the amount of like expendable income that previous generations had.
Yeah.
So like I always laughed when people thought Nick Saban was just bitching to bitch about when he went to the booster club and was saying, you know, like, A&M's doing this, and all he was saying was, guys, this is what it costs. And what he was also pointing out is, like, I can't make more rich people in Alabama.
Yeah, for sure.
If this becomes a arms race of who's got a deeper pocketbook, Alabama versus the University of Texas or even Texas A&M.
Any school in Texas.
Let me tell you who's going to win that one. It is not the team in Tuscaloosa. And so what I think is starting to develop is a lot of these jobs that we historically think of as great jobs doesn't mean that they're bad jobs, but they're not nearly as good of a job as they were 10 years ago. And I even argue now 5 years ago, because we're talking about, like, I think
pre-NIL
era. Things have doubled even like since NIL's come, because I've my understanding is those numbers add up. Like, it's basically doubled. And so now I'm asking the same people that, let's be real, pay for the coach salaries, which are insane. They're paying for all the premium seating. They're making all the donations. Those are the same people I'm asking now to fund the roster.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is where this thing, I think, eventually collapses. But it, I always keep coming back to, as long as, like, oftentimes I've always said college boosters, compared to you and me, maybe not to your, maybe not to Thad, but compared to us, they're super rich.
Yeah.
But they are not own an NFL team, own a NBA team, own a Major League Baseball team rich.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
This is the closest they can get to owning a team. And so it's like, if you got $100 million in the bank, well, you can't go buy a sports team, because I've always said, like, the whole point of me ever becoming a billionaire would literally be, okay, I would be like Mark Cuban. When can I buy my sports team?
Yeah.
Like, that's all I care about. It's like, I don't need all the, you will not see me in any political circles, high society. I just want to own a sports team. And so you get oftentimes, like, when you talk about the South, the generational thing, where that comes into play is oftentimes it's that version of, like, I can't own Ole Miss, I can't own Mississippi State, but, like, this is the closest I can get to, like, owning the football team. And so they're willing to, like, spend that way.
Yeah, and another reason to your point that this will crash too at some point, these people with money are used to, they are smartly used to investing in stuff that makes money.
Correct.
After a while, and you're like, oh, I'm constantly giving up a meal or two every year, they're not really getting nothing back.
Right, this is not like, oh, like, because you see this in golf, because golf's an individual sport. Oftentimes what happens is, like, when you're going, you haven't made the tour, the PGA Tour, you're playing, like, these lower levels, and you basically lose money. So what you do is you sell stock, essentially, in yourself, and you eventually pay back the people that funded you to get you up there. That ain't what's happening here.
No, and one thing I could tell you, I know some of golf. One thing about basketball and football players, it ain't no giving back.
No, you're not thanking the people that got you there.
No.
Correct. You're not like, you know what, Coach Hurd, I can't thank you for all you did for me. You know, you took me in as a seventh grader.
Yeah.
You got me here.
Train me, step
here's
on my
five,
couch,
pay
me.
$5 million for my big payday.
Yeah, no. It don't go like that. So I think there's, and then another thing too, when you do, if it was to be a CPA, you know, CBA, like you said, in college sports, you know what would be cool, Jeffrey? Because I'm all for kids making money.
Yeah, no.
But one
thing, I want to be clear.
But one thing, no, but this is where I take the coaching and university side a little bit. Now, I feel like these kids are getting money, but I feel sorry for so many generations and athletes before that. I should feel like that it was either GoPro or bust that was way better than these kids and way more known. If you think of some of the names of people that could have made money, from high as Reggie Bush to locally to Joe Jackson, like, they would be great players.
But 100%.
My thing is with the CBA, I want to put in there for people that's getting too entitled. So some of these university defense, they're giving some of these kids money who's not producing. Now, if we want to be grown about this thing and all the way, let's treat it like an NFL. If you and your parent want to keep asking for more, well, listen, you could earn up to $8,000 this year if you are first team all conference.
Yeah.
Being real, but if you end up getting outbeat by a walk-on, and you're averaging 2 or 4 points and one rebound, then this contract is worth $200,000, or $99,000, wherever it is. I think that holds everybody accountable, you know?
No, and like, I'm with you, where I'm also sympathetic. I don't think it does. I understand if coaches can leave any second. I understand, like, players should be able to move, too.
For
like,
sure.
You should have freedom of movement. I acknowledge that. I also think it's important oftentimes for, like, young athletes to go through some adversity. Like, sometimes sticking it out, like, the stuff that's hard is it makes you better.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, and I don't fault them. Like, I get it. I know what everyone's doing. Like, hey, as you know, not everyone can be an NBA player. But I can make this money in college. Like, I'm going to try to make as much as I can. Like, I am sympathetic to all that. It just shows that there does need to be some kind of structure.
In anything you do, yeah.
But the problem is, like, when we talk about a collective bargaining agreement, are we sure players want to be employees? Right now, it's a pretty good thing. A, I can leave whenever I want. I have no restrictions. I can become a free agent every year. I mean, that's not going to be the case if it's collectively bargained. Like, that's kind of where I'm wondering, like, do we ever even get to that point?
They're not going to be able to put the transfer rule. They're going to have to find a way that it's still going to be year-to-year contracts, because I think the transfer rule still, and I'm with you, I think a young guy, just for his life outside of sports, need to go through some adversity.
Yeah.
It's funny when parents call me and say, this coach don't like my kid. I say, ma'am or sir, this could be true, but you think when a person made a roster, they got to 9 or 10, 11 and said, don't let me take the best player available. Let me take somebody we can pick on. You know, and for me, I have a daughter and young nephews. The first time they tell me a coach don't like them or something, this is going to sound crazy, Jeffrey. I'm going to be happy. Let me see how he's not beating on you. He's not throwing.
Right. Yeah, you're talking about, yes.
You know who the coach likes. The coach always likes the best player on the team.
Yes.
Okay, so that means.
Or the player that causes him the least amount. The player he has to think about the least.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you may have like the seventh man that comes in, gives you 6 points. Never, you're not going to hear him griping
him
about playing time. Like, you can love that kid too. But
so,
yes, we always love the one that is the special one, yes.
Yeah, so that's an opportunity to get better. That's an opportunity to do that. So I'm with you. They should go through stuff. I think what started messing it up for too long, though, Jeffrey, is the way the coaches, you know, they would do an interview before the year, say they would never leave the kid. You know, so at some point, it was too much against the players. They were making a – because I heard Chris Webber say before – he was in a pizza joint,
yeah,
and couldn't go to the movies. Then and when I read them, so I'm like, hold on, that's not fair, right there. You know how much money the Fab Five made, the University of Michigan, and how much the coach made, and people was making off him. Like, you know, the kids do enjoy. You know, college kids. I never thought it'd get to the point college kids would be driving Lamborghinis and all that. But I do think they shouldn't be playing a sport where 10, 20, 30,000 people at and. They can't even. They would get in trouble if you gave them a free pizza years ago. They ineligible now. I thought that was absurd.
No, it's
sickening almost.
You see this throughout American history. We let institutions get out of hand, and that's kind of what happened. And then there's like a massive pendulum swing. Like we know, like we realize, like oh, it should not be like this. But then we swing way too far the other direction.
Too far.
Like, and it's like okay. Can we find a middle here somewhere that works for all parties? All right, we got to take a quick break. When we do, let's talk some Grizzlies basketball. We'll do that next with Eric Hasseltine, Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Eric, I want to ask you the question that Jeff's been asking me, because historically you've covered it, you've seen it up front. Is this the deepest Grizzlies roster we've seen?
I think that's tough to say that, because I go back to the year they lost to the Warriors in the semifinals, when Mike Conley had the facial fracture, and then Tony Allen had the hamstring issue, and I watched those games. The replays of game two and game three, when they, you know, get to playoff time or whenever, yeah, the Grizzlies are going to play the Warriors, and they'll do a, you know, NBA TV look back. And man, that team was deep. Man, that team was deep. You had Mark, you had Zach, you had Tony, Courtney Lee, Mike Conley, Nick Kalathis, who people didn't like because he wasn't a scorer. Nick Kalathis could facilitate the offense. He couldn't shoot, but he could facilitate the offense. And for what they needed, having a bigger point guard defensively, I mean, he wasn't Tony Allen, but it made smaller guards work a little harder. You had Kosta Koufos to fill the middle. I mean, I remember that training camp at UC San Diego that year, and I went, wow, this group's deep. And, you know, or the year after, I think it was the year after they did that, and they brought in Vince Carter. You know, they had this roster, it's a little different. It's deep. I mean, there's no question it's deep when you add in if GG Jackson can perform at the level, you know, that he's capable of. Obviously, the numbers, the shots aren't going to be there as prevalently as they were last year, but he proved he can score. I know a lot of people were really, really down on Jake LaRavia, but the way he turned that around at the end of the season and got confidence and then got confidence in the summer league, I think that's going to help. I think where you're lacking a little bit, and I know how well Scotty did and what his goal is to be the backup to Ja. I think you're just lacking a true bona fide, you know, presence there that's been in the NBA. Now, it's not to say Scotty can't do it, but you're relying on a lot of inexperience at the backup point guard position. I think you could make that case if you looked and saw, you know, somebody in the mold of a Tyus Jones who had 3 or 4 years NBA experience there. But, you know, with Desmond Bane and, you know, obviously now Trey Jemison's gone, they bring in Jay Huff, who's kind of bounced around the league on a couple of two ways and has some length and potential. It's a deep roster, but I don't know I'd call it the deepest, but it's certainly not the shallowest either. I've seen some lean years, buddy. this is a better roster than we've seen in many a year.
I mean, I even think about it. I also think the 2011 roster is underrated. Like, I know we always talk about, you know, Rudy getting hurt, but I mean, that team kind of went nine deep and mm-hmm. like, I think there's a legitimate argument, and always it's going to be relative to who the best teams in the league are. But like, I know the team at the time felt like 2015 was their best chance. I think when you really look back, you're like, I think that 2011 team might have been their best chance to actually win a title, because, you know, you have the triple overtime loss to the Thunder, but if they could get past the Thunder, they matched up really well with the Mavericks. The Heat were in year one of LeBron. They hadn't quite figured out the right mix. Like, I thought that was I think in terms of what was the chance they could have actually won a title, and like, I get it because they hadn't quite experienced it before. That's the one that I always just look back. I was like, that was probably their best shot.
Well, it was different because they lacked a pure scorer.
Yeah.
Now Zach could score, but a guy that just go get us a bucket, guaranteed bucket. I mean, Zach was probably the closest you had to that. Rudy was more in that mold, but then got hurt. You brought in Shane Battier, and that certainly helped with that trade. It's different because that team, those teams with the core 4 years were molded in the idea of you're going to come into tonight's game, and at the end of it, you're going to feel like you were in a street fight, because you were. You were getting in a street fight, and usually they were tougher and more physical and more adept to that style. That's why they gave teams that like to play flashy and up and down, they gave them so many problems. In the end, when you have a guy like a Kevin Durant in his prime back then, a Russell Westbrook in his prime, or Harden was gone at that point, they brought in other guys, but they, you know, for like the Thunder or San Antonio was so methodical and they just capitalized on your mistakes. Miami, who you mentioned, had LeBron and D-Wade and even Chris Bosh, who it always puzzled me why people were always like, oh, Chris Bosh is worthless, we shouldn't have done that. I'm like, what are you talking about? The guy is phenomenal. He's just the third option where there's two really bona fide good options. You look at Dallas, and they had Dirk, and they had Jason Kidd running the point, who was no longer, you know, Mr. Triple-Double, although he could get them. They were just different than what he was when he was in New Jersey, then Brooklyn, what became Brooklyn. But Dirk Nowitzki was one of the top scorers in the game. And he proved that year in, year out. When they needed a bucket, they went to Dirk. There was that one-legged fadeaway. And that was what they lacked. But they made up for it with defense, tenacity, and toughness. Now, they had offensive sets that scored. But the problem was they would hold teams in check for 20, 22 seconds, so the game slowed down. This wasn't a Mike Fratello situation where they held the ball every shot clock to try to minimize possessions and maximize their strengths, which I'm never going to knock Mike Fratello for the way they played, because Mike Fratello won almost 700 games in the NBA with the same style, and teams in Atlanta with Dominique Wilkins and Doc Rivers and Kevin Willis and all-stars all over the place, they won a lot of games. They just couldn't get past the Celtics, or then couldn't get past the Bulls or those Pacer teams or those Knicks teams. And eventually, you know, that's what led him to be ousted in Atlanta. But the man won almost 700 games in the NBA. So his system worked. It just was a different fit with Lionel, where you held teams in check and forced them into late shot clocks. And then even if you got down the other end of the floor, you weren't looking to run and gun. You were gonna run a set. You were gonna run a play. You were gonna get the ball in. You were gonna be more physical. You were gonna take advantage of what your physicality on defense started, and your physicality on offense was gonna finish. So, I mean, it was amazing. I remember one of the obviously the thorns in the side from the Thunder, and he was initially with the Sonics, was Nick Collison, and Nick was just a good dude off the court. You know, solid role player. And I once just got in a conversation with him, and I said, I just want to know what it's like having to guard Zach Randolph for, you know, stretches like that. He goes, imagine wrestling a bear.
Yeah.
And then when you're wrestling that bear, there's another bear over your shoulder wearing number 33. And if you run into that screen and run into Zach, I mean, he goes, you just feel beat up after you play those guys. And it wasn't that they were dirty. It wasn't that they were cheap-shotting. They were just tough. And that's why they had a lot of people's respect.
When you think back, or when we think forward to, like, let's say, like, this next 2 years, what do the Grizzlies have to do to make sure these next 2 years better than what we saw, like, take out last year, but the previous two playoff years where the Grizzlies win the division twice? In your mind, what do they have to do to ensure that this two-year run's even better than that one?
Grow up.
Yeah.
Not make mistakes that they made, just the maturity factor that just comes with being in those situations. And it's not that they were intentionally there, but, I mean, like, let's go back to the Warriors series where Ja was banged up. Obviously, staying healthy is key. Ja was out. Klay Thompson in game one makes a defensive play that, to this day, you know, the people that were there will talk about it a little bit, but it gets lost in the shuffle that Ja beat his guy to go for the game-winning basket in game one.
Yeah.
He had a beeline to the basket, and Klay Thompson, who is a very good defender at the time, took an extra step diagonally forward, which forced Ja to take a different angle, which made Ja Morant, of all people, literally hit only the backboard with a left-handed layup. It didn't touch the rim because he went from one angle to another, and it happened so fast, the ball just didn't go. That's not a mistake. That was a great defensive play. That was one of the most, you know, entertaining, although at the end it wasn't entertaining because you lost, basketball games that I can remember being a part of. It was just back and forth. Punch for punch, if you want to, you know, use a boxing term. It was just, you land one, I land one. You land one, I land one. In the end, the Warriors landed the last one and then defended the last one from the Grizzlies. But you go back to when they were in Oakland in game four with an 8-point lead, and you know, they come down and make a three. It wasn't a terrible defensive play. They just made a shot. But you come down and decide, you know, Dylan Brooks brings the ball up. I don't want to single one guy out. He turns it over. There you go. That they come back, they get another bucket. All of a sudden, now it's a 3-point lead. You come down, you take a bad three, and they come down and get a two. It's a 1-point game. You come down, you miss a defensive assignment, and boom, all of a sudden, after you made a bucket, they hit a three to tie it. They went on a 10-2 run with three Grizzly mistakes, and they capitalized on them. The step for them is they need to be the team that capitalizes on their opponent's mistakes and does not let them off the hook. I think one thing, if you remember back, and a lot of fans will remember back, those teams in those 2 years had a lot of games where they had leads, and the game got closer than it should have, not because they essentially just said, okay, we got this, it's over, but they didn't just finish off opponents the way veteran teams do, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You watch a veteran team, they get a team on the ropes, they have them ready to just put the lights out. And sometimes they did, but in big games, there was, you've got to be ready for that. And then that second surge, that last grasp at the opportunity to stay in the game that great teams have. And they showed it on their end, but defensively, they missed those opportunities. Some of that's inexperience. Some of that was maybe overconfidence. I don't know. But I chalk it up more to inexperience and having been there. There is something to be said about, look at the teams that have won titles. You know, when the Warriors went on their run, that wasn't like the second year of those guys being together. That was like the third, fourth, fifth year. Look at the years Denver missed the playoffs by a single game, got the number two seed and got bounced in the first round, and then all of a sudden figured out what it took to finish out playoff series. Boston, perfect example. Get bounced by Miami last year because they were loaded with veterans, and this year they just steamrolled their way to a championship. Now, however you want to look at that, the higher-end teams in the West beat up on each other. Joel Embiid had been hurt. The Bucks were banged up. Take it for what it was. The Boston Celtics were the best team in the league all season because they knew what it took to win a title. They went out and improved certain spots. So I think if you want to get back to that two-year run of Southwest Division titles, two straight two seeds, the series against the Lakers, I throw that out. You didn't have Steven Adams. You didn't have Brandon Clark. And the Lakers killed you inside with extra opportunities. And in game one, it was the secondary guys that got it rolling. Rui Hachimura and you know, Austin Reeves killed you. So they'll be, they play with that chip on their shoulder. They'll have that again.
I would like to see, just as a fan perspective, even though obviously it's my job, but I still have that fandom in me. The chip on the shoulder thing, I get it, keep it, but don't advertise it, feed off of it, but play with the confidence that you're not overlooked anymore. And they weren't overlooked in that second year after the year they lost to Golden State. They were now the target. They were the benchmark victory. They were the team that if you beat them as a young team, you felt like you were doing something right. And remember, they missed the one seed by a single game. And they had nights where they thought, well, we can't get there. We need to give some guys some rest. If they lost games that maybe they should have won. But nobody saw Denver struggling down the stretch the way they did. They kept the number one seed. They went to the finals and win the title. I just think, you know, it's not a day and age where guys play 82 games and play 38 minutes a night and you're going to have your best five out there more often than not. You're going to have some depth now with the way minutes are managed. But make sure that you finish out situations and don't let off too easily and too early. And I think Taylor Jenkins has matured as a coach. It'll be interesting to see how the team relates with new staff members and how that plays a role in this moving forward. But in the end, the guys that are going to take the floor on opening night, they need to do the thing that they've done all their life, which is grab a basketball, go out there, and be the best player on the court that they possibly can be. Usually that's pretty good, or else they wouldn't be in the NBA.
Eric, really appreciate it, my man.
Jeffrey, thank you, brother.
That is Eric Hasseltine, of course, the Memphis Grizzlies radio network play-by-play announcer.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.